Welcome to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. We've got a real special for you guys tonight. And if you haven't heard us before, we are three specialists in separation anxiety from Australia, the USA, and here in the UK. My name is Sarah McLaren, and I'm based in the UK at Separation Anxiety Solutions. And with me is...
AC Bell with Focused Fun in the US.
Hi, and I'm Ness Jones. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded, and I am in Australia. And we are all very excited today because we have a very, very, very special guest. Her name is Birdie Oshidi, and she is a holistic psychologist. Birdie hosts international workshops and teaches dogs about her brave formula to help them troubleshoot and navigate the challenging situations in their relationships with their dogs. But she has also had a dog with separation anxiety, so she understands exactly how people with dogs with separation anxiety, all the frustrations and the heartbreak that they're going through. So Birdie, maybe you could introduce yourself in a bit more in-depth and also tell us about your journey.
Hello everyone, thank you so much for having me. Like, I was really excited to be on today. I always love hanging out with people with similar interests, so thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yay. Yeah, I'm really keen because I honestly think you guys are really onto something. Because when my dog went through we went through our journey, and I had amazing support. Like, I had amazing teachers and trainers and friends. Like, I was given a lot of support. It was really, really hard. It was so, so hard, and it was so emotional. And I wasn't expecting it to be so emotional. And I didn't expect it to be so straining on my relationships within my family and friends and neighborhood. So it was not what I expected. And would you like me to tell the story how it all started, just so that people understand what
Absolutely.
Happened?
Absolutely. Yes, please.
Okay.
Yeah, go for it.
So I'm Birdie. I moved from Austria, Europe to Australia about 10, 11 years ago. And my husband and I were working really hard and, you know, trying to find food. He's Australian, but I found I was quite lonely here in Australia. I found it really hard to find friends. And I was working in a really busy private clinic as a clinical psychologist. And I always loved dogs. Like, dogs always had a special place in my heart, but I never had my own dog. I was just a kid that always kidnapped the neighbor's dog. And so what happened was we started volunteering at a dog shelter on the weekend just to get exercise in, to do something good for the community. So we started walking dogs for 4 or 5 hours each Saturday, Sunday, and we learned a lot about, you know, how to handle dogs and how the rescue community functions and works. And I just, after a year or so, I just said to my husband, I'm like, I really would like to get a dog. Like, I really feel like I'm in a time in my life where I would like a dog. And at that stage, my husband was very often gone for a couple of months traveling for work. So I'm like, look, I have the time. I need a companion. I need a buddy. And I'm in the right space. And bless, his name is Dan. Bless him. He's like, sure, let's make it happen. And I'm a bit of a, like, if I would be a dog, I would be a working line dog. I'm a bit intense. Like, so, you know, it didn't take long for me to go, like, I found the dog and I found the house, because at that stage we were living in an apartment and we had to relocate to a house. And in typical Birdie mode, I'm like, sure, let's make it happen. And I had my eyes set on a dog at the rescue. And her name in the at the shelter was Lotus. And she came in, I dreamed of her, like, she was super important to me. She stood out to me. And the interesting thing was that I knew she was a challenge. Like, I'm a behaviorist as a psychologist. I understand behavior. And I didn't understand dog behavior, but I had enough awareness that she's difficult. Not difficult, but just, you know, she's quite intense. She was really full on walking. She was overly excited. And in the end, we did get her, and they told us she had separation anxiety, and we did not know much about her history. We know that she hasn't been socialized, which to this day is the biggest problem, because we adopted her when she was 11 months old. Mm. And she hadn't met many men, so she was very fearful around men. Sounds and noises. And I had this classic misunderstanding that every dog that had anxiety was traumatized. Her trauma was not being introduced to the world.
Right.
That was her trauma.
Let's not say she was difficult. Let's say she was challenging.
That is a very good point. Actually, when I said difficult, I'm like, oh, that's not nice. I want to have my dogs back these days. So I'm like, oh, no. But it was a challenge. And I also was difficult and challenged, because what happened within a very short period of time when we got her home, and we called her Luna. And I guess the name, how the original owner called her, so the organization called her Lotus, but her original name was Luna. And I had the same name chosen for her. So it was funny. So when we got her, in my head, I'm having like, oh, I'm having this amazing buddy, and we're going to the beach for walks and coffee shops, and we're going to go bushwalking. And, you know, I'm going to be taking her to my friend's house who also have dogs and they have small children. And it was nothing like that. Nothing like that. It started off that I think there wasn't a day where I didn't come home and something wasn't broken. I think I have a photo of my dog that I can send out, but she loved to redecorate her house and the home. And, you know, like, I was very lucky that my husband was very patient with me, because I'm like, yeah, sorry, the Wi-Fi's gone. Sorry, there are another six holes in the garden. Sorry, she ripped up every single bed and every single carpet. She ripped up every single pot plant. She ripped up every single fly screen. And we were renting.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was very stressful. And in my head, I'm like, oh, she just kind of stayed home while I'm at work. And, you know, I go out and do my thing, and I walk her in the morning and at night. And I thought I was quite prepared. Nothing had me prepared for this, because didn't take long, and I got calls and letters from my very new neighbors saying, listen, we can hear your dog all the time.
Mm.
And our house was on top of a cliff, and Luna could access the winter garden, which was a glassed area. So she created the perfect echo, and she figured that out really quickly, that when she goes in there, it was just this megaphone of hello. And I felt really distressed, because I could see she was distressed.
Right.
You know, like mm-hmm. this was, to me, I had enough understanding and awareness that I'm like, you're not well.
Mm.
And it ramped up. Like, I could see that, you know, my behavior and the things I touched or what I did cued her for her letting know that I went to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember having to put letters in every single neighborhood's house telling them, I'm aware of this, we're working on it, we're getting support, but we need time, please, thank you for your patience, we really appreciate it, no one's getting murdered, I know it sounds like it, but I assure you, my dog's not being tortured.
Good for you for doing that.
Sorry?
I say good for you for doing that.
I was lucky that I had a bit of awareness around things just from my background, but let me tell you, it also bit me that I had knowledge, because my understanding of human behavior doesn't necessarily translate to dog behavior. It's different. And I wasn't aware of the amount of repetitions it took it just to desensitize her to things. Like, they were months of work. Just, I think her initial threshold was maybe 30 seconds being buying her herself. That was, I think, where we started off. And then it was desensitizing her for me with certain shoes, touching the door handle, touching the car keys. Because we lived on a cliff, she could hear the stairs, you know, walking up and down the stairs, starting the car engine, driving down a little bit the driveway, coming up, which was really, really annoying, because my driveway was super difficult because it was super steep on a hill. And then it was just doing the same thing with my husband. And then, you know, my dog is also quite, she isn't great in social situations because she hasn't been socialized. So she, and also the neighbor's house burned down, which added to her anxiety and her too reactivity. So in the end, she was then human and dog reactive and had separation anxiety.
Oh, wow.
So we made best friends with everyone at dog training because that's where we were. But I can't tell you. I mean, my dog, Luna, she's sitting here beside me right now in her crate, has been the most amazing heart opener and teacher I've ever encountered. And she changed my career. But I love what you're doing because I don't think that many people get it, how stressful, emotional, difficult, expensive. Mm. And yeah, it's just a huge teacher. And if you don't approach it as a teacher, if you take it as, which I did for a while, as I'm failing at something because I'm quite perfectionistic and I'm quite driven. And you know, then having to set these massive boundaries in your life, like I'm a people pleaser and I go to people, don't you dare to touch my dog. You can't touch my dog. Mm. Or no, ignore her. Or no, she is looking very cute, but no, she can't come out right now. Or we need to do this right now. I didn't do well with that, telling people, no, we're not, you can't. So, yeah, that's us in a nutshell.
Bertie, do you mind telling us a bit about your psychology background and how that's evolved?
Sure. So I studied clinical psychology and did a postgrad in clinical psychology in Austria, and I came to Australia and did more training in psychotherapy. I had different backgrounds that I specialized in. One part was neurodegenerative illnesses and diseases, especially multiple sclerosis. And then it was more behavioral because I entered private practice. So it was more like mood disorders, anxiety, trauma. I do a lot. I stopped my private clinic and I took a year off and I'm coming back. But I have a lot of training in complex trauma and PTSD. And now my focus shifted. I really love working, integrating nature into therapy. Like I feel like people are really benefiting from being outside. So it's a lot of eco-centered psychotherapy and being outside. And that's why I love dogs too, because dogs are part of nature in your home. And, you know, I feel like she came into a part of my life where my ego needed a bit of a, it sounds bad, ego, but my constructs of how I saw the world needed a bit of rattling, you know. so it was good timing. But yeah, so right now I'm coaching and I'm in private practice, but doing workshops worldwide, like I was presenting in America, my bravery model, how to help you get psychologically for the dog owner through a difficult behavior modification program.
One of the common sayings in dog trainer land, which you probably heard, is about how for most of us it's a challenging dog that's got us where we are today. And yeah, it's those dogs that challenge all your preconceptions and change the way that you think about everything.
Yes. I did a dog training accreditation course, so I'm a qualified dog trainer. I don't act on it, like I still only focus on a human, but I just wanted to understand, like I love learning. I so agree. And I think that Ness and I, before we discussed on coming onto the podcast, I said to Ness, I'm like, Ness, tell me, do you see that too, that people get really emotional when they do it, right? Tell me more about it. Because in psychology, we have this term, and it's called an effect bridge. And an effect bridge is, for instance, and I can only speak for myself here, but for instance, when I had to set a really strong boundary to someone, because they wanted to engage with my dog that wasn't having her back, it wasn't helpful for her, that triggered me that I had to maybe set boundaries in the past and it didn't go well. Whether that is because your needs were met, or they didn't listen, or you never had a role model how to do it. So I believe, and I see it, that when people engage with their own dog, that very often they're being triggered from their history, their emotional history, their trauma history, or their... doesn't even have to be massive traumatic things as in PTSD, but just attachment style theories, you know, how we form relationships, how we perceive being loved, seen and heard. And I think that in separation anxiety, that really comes up because it pulls on those attachment threads, how we build relationships.
Yeah, it was interesting because I remember the other day we were talking and I was saying about how owners feel so guilty when they walk out the door because they know their dogs are in such a emotional state themselves.
Sure.
And yeah, you touched on the empathy and past trauma perhaps then as well, that feeling of guilt that comes up.
Yes, and I don't know, but I think sometimes, not for everyone, but sometimes people have so much empathy for the dog because they know how it feels not to have their needs met, right? They know how it feels to be really struggling and no one sees it and looks at it. And in my journey with my dog Luna, I think the struggling bit was that I couldn't explain it to her that it will be okay. They're an animal that lives in the moment, right? So I couldn't use my tools that I would use with humans and go like, no, we got you back. We're on to this. There's hope. We make it work. Like, just stick with it. And I couldn't use any of this. And it frustrated me so much because they're creatures of the present moment, which we need and adore and benefit from. But I struggled with that quite a bit.
If ever the phrase actions speak louder than words was fitting, it's definitely in the case of working with your separation anxiety dog.
Yes. And you can't. So can I swear on this book? What can I say? Oh, I've tried to be kind. You can't fake it. You know, you got to show up. And I think I was going to say bullshit your way around it, but you need to show up. You need to really do the work. And you can't take shortcuts. You can't shorten a desensitization plan and go like, oh, today we're just going to skip the next step in your exposure ladder. You can't. And I'm sure there are different modes around it. And I have to say with Luna in the end, what worked was a real multi-approach. Like there was so much, you know, there was fun and engagement games involved. There was a lot of confidence building involved. There was obedience training involved. There was lots of nose work involved. Like it was not just constantly working on her desensitization, but I'm glad you're here because the world needs you. It's a very challenging topic. And I don't think that a lot of dog trainers actually enjoy working with that topic because it is so encompassing.
Yeah, it is. It is a big road, a long road. And I think a lot of our clients maybe hope that there's a magic pill to swallow, that they can just wave a magic wand and their dog will be okay, but you have to put the work in. And so therefore you have to be able to, emotionally be prepared for that as well, for putting in the work, if that makes sense.
You do. And I honestly in hindsight think for my life circumstances, I maybe could have picked a different dog. Like I think what I wanted and what I picked didn't match. I'm super glad I picked Luna, but at the time I was attracted to what I'm always attracted. I'm attracted to a challenge. I'm attracted to something with lots of energy. I'm attracted to something with a lot of personality and sassiness and quirkiness. Like, but I think for what I really wanted, and also being an inexperienced dog owner, maybe I could have had an easier start if I just, you know.
But I love that you've called your international workshops My Dog, My Teacher, because that's the journey that you've been on, but it's also what most pet owners are on as well.
Yeah, I know. It's like I don't think a lot of my psychology friends understand it because they're not in the dog industry, but I honestly believe that they put a little bit of light on our shadow side, you know, the side in us that we maybe have ignored or just haven't really touched on, or it's just subconsciously blubbering under the surface. No, I haven't had many other teachers, and as a psychologist we have a lot of self-development and training that tackled my perfectionism and my standards as hard as my dog.
Wow, that's a big statement.
No, hands down, because you can't willpower your way through this. You become unkind otherwise. And I don't want to be unkind. And I also, it taught me also a lot about having to identify the values I had in this relationship, because in my head, I'm like, of your beach going buddies, your coffee shop buddies, your snuggle buddies, everyone loves us buddies. But the value in the end is I got to be a good companion to my dog. I got to have her back. We want to have a good, fun relationship. And just because it doesn't look like how I imagine it doesn't mean that I can't have those things. They just maybe present differently.
Based on your experience with your dog and then kind of your educational and professional background, what are the kind of some tips that you might have for our listeners who are trying to struggle through with their dogs and their
Sure. So I like doing practical stuff when I go on podcasts, because I'm like, well, let's do, you know, it's a good opportunity to make, to contribute to the world. So I want to share two things with you. One thing that I really had to learn, and that's where we really had a change in behavior, in my behavior and in my dog's behavior, was that we had a close look at how to regulate your nervous system. I honestly believe that if you are hyper-aroused as a dog owner, or you are stressed, you read the situation wrong, you make the wrong judgment calls, you may be, you're just not setting yourself up for success, really. And a lot of the time, I don't know if you agree with this, but the dogs that I know that have separation anxiety, they usually have other things they're working on as well, whether that be, you know, being exposed to certain stimulus, or that they are a bit leash reactive, or, you know, there's more to it usually. So I developed, and this is, I think, the main contribution that most people know me, or they heard about, is I've took something from therapy, from psychological therapy, and it's anchoring yourself, and I've adapted it to when you're with your dog. And it's essentially a mindfulness grounding exercise. And to me, that was probably the biggest change, because every time I touched a lead or every time I engaged with my dog, I just had this moment where I could gain clarity in what I was doing. And I was not just an autopilot. Do you want me to show you what it looks like?
Sure.
Yeah. So basically, the drop your anchor exercise, you can do it sitting, you can do it standing. But it's basically always that you, A, recognize you should center yourself. That's how it starts, right? You go like, hey, I'm about to engage with my dog, and this should be a helpful therapeutic interaction. So let's just ground myself so that we're not having 20,000 things in our head or the pressure. We just have to sync with our dogs. They're animals of the present moment, so I need to join them, right? So it's kind of like the syncing process. So you basically, if you're standing, you put your feet into the ground and you just go into your body. Most people that I work with, they're very in their head like me. So it's really important that they come into their bodies. So I say, push your feet into the ground. Like, I really want that you feel strong, and I want that you feel the body touching the surface. And you want to, if you're standing, you want to stand strong and tall, because dogs are so good at reading micro expressions and micro movements. And so for them, it's really important that you look strong. If you're already coming there like this, you know, like with lots of energy, and that's not helpful. So it's really, I think, a key that you're strong and tall. And it also sends to signal to your body, hey, actually, I'm preparing for something. It sends this feedback back. And also put your chin up, because when I sometimes help people trial their dogs, and I help them with their body posture. And dogs very often track the chin of a dog owner. And when we see people trialing, and the trial some days maybe doesn't go so well, the chin always goes lower and lower, and then the shoulders follow, and it just goes like this. And the dogs are very receptive to that. So I'm always like, shoulders back, chin up. And then the next thing is that you just focus on your breathing. That's your energy, right? That's the engine of your body, your breath. And you just really try to slow down and just focus on that. And when you feel like, hey, I actually can focus on my breathing, then you can also notice, do I need to let go of anything? So for instance, if I would walk my dog and I would have a difficult scenario, I'm like, I'm already worried about that person approaching. Then I'm like, I just let go of this stress, and I just focus on what can I do? Like, I try to go back into problem solving mode and not into emotional mode. And that's what the breath is grounding us. And then when you do that, you just really go back, you let it out, you breathe through. And when you feel like, okay, I've connected to my breath, I feel strong. Even if you got to fake it at the beginning, you scan around your environment and you go like, what's important here? Where do I have clarity? Because I think clarity very often gets lost when we're too emotional or caught up in the moment. And dogs need clarity. And I could do a PhD in not being clear with my dog in my communication. That was the thing. That's a lot because I sent mixed signals very often. Like, I would, you know, like I would want her to be strong, but then I would pat it a whole time nervously. Like, you know, my body language would just, my emotions would just transmit onto her. So that's one of the things that I found the most helpful. And it's also so important if you have a leash that your hands are really relaxed, that there's no pressure on your lead, that, you know, your body's really signaling, hey, we're cool, we can do this, we've got this. And I'm happy to, I sent Ness this little drop your anchor handout yesterday, so I'm happy for you to share it. It's public knowledge, like, if please share it with anyone who would, if you find it helpful. And I did that exercise a lot when I came home. Like,
oh, when you came home, not when you were leaving?
Both.
Okay.
Like, every for me, the doorknob became a massive trigger to myself. It just all of a sudden symbolized so much that I'm like, okay, I am a person that can, that got confused attention with connection. So I gave my dog, probably in the wrong moment, too much attention without looking at the quality of the connection. So what I mean by that is I would come home and scream out of my of joy to see my dog, right? Whereas I was taught it might be helpful that your dog goes like, you're coming home, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal if you leave either, right? So instead of highlighting what I'm actually doing, I'm like, hey, we're cool. We got this beautiful connection. You're sweet ass. Like, don't worry, we're fine. Or the same thing, if I would be leaving, I would make sure she would have everything. And you know, this nervous head padding, that's really unhelpful. For us, it was unhelpful. Maybe for some people, it's helpful. For us, it was unhelpful because it cued her.
We do try to get our owners to be neutral. Well, not, you know, not necessarily ignore the dogs, but just be a little bit less frantic, I guess.
Neutral. Your neutral is me, like, really backing off because I was, like, I can pinpoint so many things, and I love that I'm always teaching what I'm struggling with because I made every mistake under the sun. I think I'm a poster child of don't do what Birdie did. but I get it, and I think that's why I can empathize with a lot of people because they, you know, sometimes in the dog industry people are a bit shy around telling you what's really happening at home, and there's a bit of shame maybe even involved because it's a very private topic. And I always tell them, oh, listen, what you've done I've also done, like, you're sitting amongst peers.
It's interesting because I've always thought, I haven't had dogs with separation anxiety, so I've kind of always looked at it, well, you must feel really guilty, you know, leaving your dog knowing that it's going into a panic. But now I'm thinking, when you touch that door to go out, that doorknob to go out, and when you're touching it to come back in, and probably all the time in between while you're outside, you've probably got that panicky feeling like, oh, my God, what am I going to come back to? Yes. Am I going to come back to my house being destroyed? Am I going to come back to, you know, the neighbors banging on my door saying, get that dog, shut up, you know, all that. And that would make you very, very anxious. And I think, Sarah, in particular, you've said you've had a lot of clients that are suffering from anxiety as well as having a dog with separation anxiety.
The double whammy. I mean, it's bad enough that, you know, you have this idea in your head, like you said, Birdie, about, you know, springing through the summer fields with your dog by your side.
And, oh, geez, Sarah, thank you for getting me. You get me. That's exactly what happened.
And sitting at that coffee shop with your dog curled up on the floor next to you, you know, all those lovely dreams that people have. And then the sudden reality of having a dog with separation anxiety completely changes everything. And it's not, unlike some things which only involve you and your dog, with separation anxiety, it involves everybody. It involves your friends, it involves your family, it can involve your peers, it can involve work colleagues, it involves trainers, it can involve your neighbours. I mean, that, and that's just the pressure from all those people who are all telling you conflicting things, and all, you know, a lot of them think that you're losing your marbles because you're doing all this work when you should maybe just leave home.
Yes, and they don't get it. Like, I think it's hard to get for a dog person if and I'm really, really lucky because I made amazing friends in the dog industry. Like, you know, I only know Ness because through dogs. And Ness saw how I was at a sports club trying something out and just hurting myself because I tried something out. Like, you know, like we had some good laughs and we don't try not to take ourselves too seriously. But I do believe that in the end, and this is the second thing that I teach, is to me it came down to being brave. And brave as in finding resources in myself that I haven't unlocked before. Mm. And that's what my dog taught me, was to be really, really brave. And I used to brave as I think it's called an acronym. I should have looked it up.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Thank you. But I did it, and I had to remind myself on difficult days, you know, where my dog destroyed maybe another $2,000 worth of furniture. And that was me trying already that she doesn't have access to those things. That's me sleeping up. What is this? Is me, you know, having a busy life with two children. Is that I had to remind myself, hey, this is something to stand for. So I'm a person that likes in difficult moments something to hold on to, whether that's you know, a poem, a phrase, a song, or a mantra. Like, I like that if I don't know what to do, think of that. When you had clarity, that was really good feeling. That was really helpful. So you're a bit kamboozled in the head right now, so think about it, you know, when you had time to access that knowledge. Because I honestly believe when you're so overwhelmed in your own nervous system, you don't make good calls. And you need to practice in a state that you can cope. Like, when I deal with people who have a reactive dog, because they had a lead-on attack, I'm like, we need to get you that you can cope without a doctor, without your heartbeat getting increased, before we even attach a dog to this, because it will just get passed on to the dog. So for me, what helped me the most was the BRAVE formula. And for me, B in the BRAVE formula stands for be in the present moment and ground yourself. You know, my head has a tendency to catastrophize and make things worse. So I'm like, no, just look at the facts, what's happening right here, problem solving, but ground yourself, be in the present moment. The R stands for reconnect with your power. To me, that's knowledge very often. You know, this is my training, listening or thinking about what I've been just working on, what I've been taught at dog school. But it also means that, no, I can do this. I'm a capable person. I can do this. We can do this. I've got this. Just believing that deep down, this is just a teacher and a challenge like it is in a video game. It's something to learn and grow from. Mm. So that helps me. The A stands for acceptance. And that was a long journey because it involves grief. I couldn't have a second dog because I just couldn't. The managing of Luna with another dog is something I'm not up for. I live in a very small house, so that took me a little while to just grieve that. And then also grieving that my holidays are quite, like, I don't trust everyone with my dog simply because she's not your standard toy. Yeah. Like, not a toy, but, you know, like, my friend has a toy poodle, that's why I said toy. And that toy poodle is so easy. She's just like, just feed him, just look after him, he's fine. And I'm like, here is the protocol. This is someone comes on the property. You can't have, you know, this is like, because there's danger involved. Like, she's a big dog that lunges at people if she doesn't like them. Yeah. And we've tried a lot of training, like, you know, we've tried a lot, but she's very territorial. Mm. So for me, the acceptance of loving that side in her, and it has helped me many times. Like, you know, we had twice people trying to burgle our house and they buggered off because Luna was very verbal about it. So I love that side in her, but the acceptance part is that if I go on holidays, I better be organized because I can't just call someone.
Hmm. I suppose you're also grieving the lifestyle you wish you had, you know, the going to the beach and the coffee shops and all that. So you're grieving that aspect that you never really got when you adopted her.
Yes, and that's true. So I was really lucky in hindsight because in the end I got everything I wanted, but the packaging was different. And that's the V in the formula of values, you know. So I wanted to have a buddy. I wanted to have a friend. I can have a friend without taking her to the coffee shop, right? I can do a lot of, like, my dog's very fun to train. She's super entertaining. Like, she cracks me up every single day. No one makes me laugh as much as her. And we call her the stink eye queen because she has a very expressive face. Like, she tells you exactly what she means. And so I just had to learn to grieve the idea that I had. And then find ways to embrace what I wanted with her. And so we became really good friends in our dog training classes. You know, I made amazing friends with similar dogs. So it all worked out, but I just struggled to accept the packaging. And there was a lot of growth involved. And I was extremely fortunate that my husband is a person that supports me. And he's like, you really love that dog. And I'm a bit sad and really ashamed. I wanted to give her up at one stage. Like, I was in tears so many days that it impacted work. And I'm like, I don't know if that was a good decision. Like, I really don't know. And I know that if it wouldn't have been for Dan, he's like, no, she's family, make it work. You can have, like, he was extremely generous. He's like, get the training you need. Like, you know, he was very supportive in giving up his Sunday so I could drive to training school.
That's and that's something that a lot of our clients and people with dogs with separation anxiety struggle with, which is something I actually wanted to ask you about. So you've been really lucky to have Dan on your side, you know, just despite the fact that Luna's destroyed your house over and over and over again. But what can people with dogs with separation anxiety that don't have that support do? So often they're, you know, their family and friends are saying, oh, just let them cry it out, they'll be all right. And oh, you're overreacting, or you're mothering your dog and you're creating the anxiety. Or alternatively, so one of the things we say with dogs with separation anxiety is that you need to suspend absences and find somebody to manage, you know, to look after your dog when you can't be there while you're doing the training. But what if their family and friends aren't on board and won't help them, you know, and they've got no support? What do you say to those people?
This is a hard one, and I don't think I have a recipe. Like, I think that's something you really have to look at individually. So, for instance, my children are in their 20s, so it was a very different scenario. If I had little kids.
You're not old enough to have children in your 20s.
You do if you marry someone who has stepchildren, and
fair play.
Your life for a really long time. So I think the game would have looked really differently if I had little kids. Because, like, I think then there's a well-being question sometimes, you know, and I would maybe see that differently. What saved us was that we had a doggy daycare that had Luna when I was at work. So my neighbors got a break. That was really helpful. In the end, I also see if I work with people individually, then sometimes it's for them that they have to learn to be assertive and learn to ask for their needs. So it could be some people really, their dog, to me, I'm a bit of a spiritual person. I'm like, maybe this dog is an opportunity for learn to advocate for your needs, and you set boundaries and you learn to express yourself, and you learn, in therapy we call it, you learn not to self-surrender. Other people's needs are not more important than yours. Right.
I think that's one of the most common obstacles that I see with my clients, is just, it's so difficult for them to ask for help.
Yes.
You know, because I'm always preaching, build your village. You need the support. You know, you cannot get through this on your own. You need to, you know, whatever it is, let's come up with some strategies. And they just have so much trouble asking their neighbor to watch their dog for an hour so they can go on a run.
I do think that dogs, every dog that I have met in the person with separation anxiety taught them a lot about that, reaching out for help, but also being not aggressive around it, but assertive around it. You know, it's, and I think from a psychological perspective, if you've never learned to advocate for your needs, it's a bit of a journey that you find that right balance and knowing who to approach and how to approach and holding those boundaries. That's certainly what my dog taught me. And look, I know that my family back in Europe calls him the crazy dog lady. I'm very aware of that. Like, but I am not ashamed of that. Like, I'm very proud of what Luna and I have done so far. Like, we're helping a lot of people. Like, you know, we it's who I am. It's part of my path. It's part of my purpose. And if you can't relate to that, that's okay. I'm fine. I don't need your approval. I don't need external validation around it because in my heart, I know I did the right thing.
Right.
Saying that, I also had people where giving up the dog was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, this is what I mean. There is no recipe. This is a really individual choice. But I think that's why it's so cool that you're around, because you can guide them, you can help them, you can identify them, and you can give. I think I was so lucky that I had people who made me feel like that's okay and normal. Because, for instance, when we went to obedience class, and I had an amazing trainer, like, I love Lauren, she was amazing, she was extremely generous and very good. He couldn't enter the facility for a while because my dog just lost it, me included. So there were lots of times I was in tears in my car because I'm like, I can't even enter the class. We are so far just from getting close. And I was so glad that I wasn't judged for it. You know, I had teachers in my life and people with professionals who are like, no, keep going. It's a long journey. It's okay. And my dog, I could see that professionals were struggling with her too. Like, she gave professional split lips frequently. I think that's a really good point, that you need a village to be okay. And I do believe, that's why I do call it my dog, my teacher. So for some people, it's a teacher. For some people, it's not. And they feel very different.
Yeah.
I don't think that you would attract people who are not interested in it. Like, I think
Definitely.
You interest people who want to make it work.
Right. Yeah. Right. So what's the E?
I had it. There were two. There's the two versions. One is end all unhelpful thinking patterns. Like, you know, don't let your mind get in the way. But then I changed it to just embrace the journey. Like,
I like that.
Like, I'm like, oh, let's get away from thinking because that's so technical. But I'm like, just embrace it, lean into it. And I try these days to see life. Sounds a bit simplistic, but a bit like a video game with levels, and sometimes you have an obstacle that you have to figure out how to make it work, because it will reveal a lot about your strengths, not just your weaknesses, but also your strengths. And dogs are amazing for that, especially dogs with separation anxiety. I think they're one of the most impactful things a person can encounter, because it's so personal.
I think I'm having a moment. I missed V as well.
I think V value.
Yeah, you need to know why you got your dog. So I think, interestingly enough, people get very often difficult dog. Well, not, I keep saying that, Ness, you should.
challenging dogs.
Challenging. They get these dogs when they're actually in a quite a vulnerable position. Like, very often I'm noticing when I ask people, tell me the circumstances you got your dog. Breakup, relocation, new job. You know, illness. Like, there's always a big, it's not like, oh, look, life was so good, life was so harmonious, and I was just a bit bored. There's always this love connection there, and it looks different for everyone, whether that's a sport buddy, a competition buddy, or an obedience buddy, or a hiking buddy. But there's always a need that people try to fulfill with dogs. And I think it's really important to find out what that is, because that says a lot about the values.
And I think that's happened a lot in lockdown as well, isn't it? I think that's why so many people have got puppies and dogs in lockdown. It's fulfilling some need that we are all desperately missing from lack of social contact.
I see a lot people where dogs have more therapeutic value than other means. Like I feel that a lot of people reach out to me and they're actually not interested in therapy, but they're interested in really working on a relationship with the dog, because a relationship with a dog can feel so pure and safe. Mm. It's a very sacred thing, I think. And not to humanize dogs and you know, but they're special. They are special.
For all their faults and for all their challenges and the behaviors that we may or may not want, the fact that we know that none of it's based in malice and there's no intent behind it, it's just behavior that shows itself in the moment, and you can't argue with that, can you? You can't. All you can do is accept it and embrace it and like you said, go forward.
You have to. And I also do believe that they are reminding us how we can hold life a bit lighter, you know. Mm-hmm. like the expectations. Like I'm a person that honestly will work most of her life on my expectations. And I'm a person who, you know, I'm quite open about that, that had mental health struggles in the past. So I understand it, but I also really think that dogs help us to hold our thoughts and our beliefs and our, just the way we view our world. They open a new door how we could see things. They're quite magical in that way.
Mm. Just getting back to the lockdown thing, I was talking to a lady yesterday and she was saying she got her dog, she had a dog before COVID, but then the lockdown thing, she basically said she spent 14 months with it without leaving it alone, and now she finds cover for it when she's out. But she did have to go out to a concert and she did find cover for the dog, but she was gone for 4 hours and she said she was the one with separation anxiety. She was like, I've spent the last 14 months with this dog 24/7 and now I have to leave it, and I'm like, I can't cope with this.
I have a similar story. Like I have a very beautiful friend, he's a very strong male friend, and he lives in Queensland and he's very strong and he actually doesn't need people much in his life. But you take his dog away from him for 4 or 5 hours, he's like, Bertie, I miss my dog. Like, I miss my dog. And he's a person that would very rarely say these things to another human. Like, he's, you know, he's a very blokey kind of bloke. And but his dog, he's like, and then I talked to him on the phone the other day and he was talking to his dog and it was so sweet and cuddly and warm. And I'm like, I don't know that side of you. Like, so I do love how dogs have a special connection to our heart.
Birdie, how would you help clients deal with the I hate to say this word, but the failure side of things? So when they're training and things are going well and then one day it all goes horribly wrong and suddenly they feel like they've failed. And, yes. You know, we try so hard to prepare them for this.
How did you know I wrote a secret PhD around this? Because
that's
me.
Oh, dear. It's a tough one because we try and prepare them and we try, you know, we try and prepare clients to say that, you know, things, there's variability in training and it goes up and down. And, you know, one day it's all going to go horribly wrong, but we'll be there to hold your hand. But when it happens, they still fall apart and they still feel that they failed. Is there anything we can do?
So how nerdy do you want me to get? Like, I believe that when you feel like a failure, it shows up how you have been taught or how you were role modeled or conditioned to handle these situations. So if you grew up in an environment that helped you through it, that as a failure wasn't a representation of yourself, people move on. So I think the recovery time is the interesting thing to look at. You know, it's quite normal to feel like a failure, but the interesting thing is, how does it look like? Mm. So for instance, for me, if I would have felt like a failure in the past just by my life, I would have felt like that I'm not worthy as a person. So it would have reflected on my self-worth. And if you have a client that struggles with that, they probably will feel like they're failing a few times, but the magic in there is how they recover and what support they get during recovery and what they hear during recovery. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure we can stop them from feeling that, but it's how we nurture them back up, because that's the new neurological pathways you're creating, right? Because mm-hmm. you then all of a sudden go like, it's okay, we can make this work, I believe in you. There is no, like, if a child in the past, for example, if you had a difficult childhood and you failed, maybe, you know, love was removed from you, attention was removed from you. Maybe you would put more pressure onto you. Maybe things were said to you. So then if they feel like a failure and they have this very supportive village behind them, they go like, no, we got you. This is okay. Nothing changed in the quality of the relationship. That's healing.
Mm.
And they will see that their dog is quite fair. Dogs are very forgiving. I made many mistakes with my dog and she never held a grudge. Never.
No.
And you don't need to get it perfect. I think people forget that. If you're on the right track, it will show.
Mm. I think it's an interesting point you raised, Bertie. We, as separation anxiety specialists with our clients, we kind of have to be their cheer squad and we're like their support mechanism, especially if they're not getting that anywhere else.
Totally. And I think that is, if I would be looking for, if I would have to rewind time and I would go through it, that's what I would look for. Like, that would be something that I would want to have. So for me, I'm the type of person, I'm drawn to technique and knowledge, but I'm also drawn to, do you have my back and do you care?
Mm.
Because that's in the end really important to me, that I stick with it. You know, like if it's a one-off procedure, like I once had surgery and I had a surgeon and he had no bad manner. Like his manners were terrible, but he did an amazing job. But I didn't care because it's a one in a lifetime experience. I wake up, I'm like, thank you, bye. I didn't need to deal with you much. But if you have a journey with a behavior mod, I need to like that person and I need to feel welcomed and understood and cared for. Give them the support they need, but don't enable them.
Yes.
It's a fine line because you know you don't want to feel sorry for them. You want to share the moment with them, but you always have to, we can do this, you know, like, and
yes.
And I, despite not liking it in the moment, I had to be told truth.
Yeah, you do. You have to be open with them, but yes, also empathetic for sure.
I think it's the packaging. It's very often the packaging, you know.
Absolutely.
A person asked me, what's a clinical psych? And I'm like, I'm just really good at packaging things. I'm just really good to understanding how to package information for you.
One of the biggest things we all offer our clients is that support, that cheerleading, that, okay, you don't have to make a decision about what the next step is or where we go from here, because we're going to tell you, you know, we're going to guide you through that. And I think that's one of the most difficult things when you're working through it alone and you experience variability or, you know, quote unquote failure, that just pressure of what's next, what do I do next, can be really overbearing.
So true. So true. And I found it really helpful that I got a summary. Like I had a lot of written summaries from my sessions. That was really helpful because a lot happens in those sessions and I'm not necessarily always in a very receptive state. So I was really loving that I had something to refer to. The other thing, I really, in hindsight, think it would be really good that in my head, I early on, instead of calling it a failure, which I did, to see it as a teacher. And I think that's what as mentors can pass on. This is just a teacher, you know, like that you use that curiosity about learning, which is a growth mindset, that they go like, it's okay. It's just a learning process. And also what also was difficult for me, and I don't know if you see that, I compared myself a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that,
oh, yes.
Yep. That was not helpful.
And I think that's true of people with dogs with separation anxiety. You know, they're because every dog's different. So, like, you know, with my clients, some of them might start off on a 5-minute duration where the dog can cope with being home alone. Some of them are on 5 seconds. So the person with the 5-second dog can't compare themselves to the 5-minute dog, or somebody with a dog that's perfectly okay for being home alone, because they are individuals, and you just have to get out of your head and say, right, this is my dog. This is where we are now. And our journey is different to their journey.
And I do think that dogs are such an amazing, valuable teacher in that, because I think that's a theme in society that we constantly compare ourselves. So this is an amazing opportunity that you learn to embrace and honor your path with your dog. You know, that you go like, yeah, this is me. We are showing up. I don't need your approval. I don't need to justify or do anything. This is us. But that is hard.
It's hard to embrace that too. Like,
that's,
I mean,
hard. That's yeah, like a Buddhist lesson, you know? This, yeah.
There's a whole journey, isn't there, that our clients go through. I mean, I suppose it's almost like when you talk about stages of grief, you know, there's the first bit where they first get in contact with you and they're all G'd up and really happy because they feel like they've got control of something at last and they're going to be doing something about it. And then there's that little bit where they dip a little bit because they realize that they are not the exception to the rule, and their dog isn't going to go through the program in 6 weeks and get to 4 hours. You know, it is going to take time, and they kind of dip at that point. And then there's the coming back up at the other side when they start to understand really,
yes,
how the,
yes,
training works and you know what they need to do, and that, like you say, the acceptance bit that comes. So there's this whole fabulous journey that they go through.
It is, and it's a journey that very often has flow-on effects, you know, like it very often then impacts the relationship with your loved ones that you have, yes, to address. Mm. You know, all of a sudden, for instance, you realize, hey, my partner and I are not good at communicating in stressful situations. We need to work on that as well, you know. so it is, I appreciate it. And I'm also relieved that we're kind of at the end of our journey, but our behavior journey took years, and we learn every day. Like, you know, this is something, like I just the other day, my friend, she has a beautiful shepherd, and they went to the beach off lead, and I can't even let my dog off lead on my own property simply because, mm-hmm, she has such a strong prey drive. I live in a national park.
Oh, wow.
So you know, and she's just coming for a visit and throwing the ball around. Her dog's never been on my property, and I'm just like, I'm jealous, and I had to own that. And I don't like being jealous because it's a side of me that I thankfully don't often have, but I'm like, I'm jealous of your dog right now and your life. You just opened a bird, chuck a ball, and off it goes.
For our listeners, can you just really quickly review the BRAVE acronym?
Yes, I can. And also I can send it, like, I'm happy for you to share it wherever you want.
Yeah, fabulous. Like, thank you.
Wherever you want. So being brave is what I held on to when I was struggling. And I learned that by heart. So every time I felt really overwhelmed, I remembered. So for me, B stands being in the present moment and grounding myself so that I'm not in my head, that I come into my body, and that I am using a rational mindset, a problem-solving mindset. Then I'm reconnecting with your power is the R. Is like, what are you working on? What have your teachers said to you? Remember that you're strong. You will get there. See all the successes you've already achieved. The A stands for acceptance. Accept what you're feeling. Don't fight it. It's a teacher. Make room for it. If you're grieving, if you're jealous, Birdie's felt that too. If you feel like you're not doing well, talk to Birdie. Birdie's been there, probably was. The V stands for verify your values and act on them. So if you, for example, got your dog to be a companion or a buddy, find different ways to embrace that and live with that. The E stands for embrace the journey. It's a teaching moment. It's a big moment probably in your life. So I understand that it's not easy, and I don't think that should be downplayed, but embrace it. find moments of joy, celebrate events, you know, look at your dog when like mine gives me the stink eye and I just crack up. So lean into it, but tread lightly, you know.
That's and be it. Kind to yourself, I guess.
Yeah, be kind. And I think that's not part of the break from it, but one thing that I learned is that I sometimes need a break from training.
Mm. Yeah.
Like I'm a very go-getter and I'm like, no, we both need a break. We just need a day. Yeah, that's it. And yeah, learn how to be in the present moment. You can drop your anchor and ground yourself. And just before you engage with your dog, be sure that you meet them in the present moment and not in your head.
So, Bertie, if people want to contact you, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, email is probably the best way. It's hello@bertieoshidi.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I have a website that hopefully is up running soon. It's called bertieoshidi.com. And, yeah, I'm having online events happening. I'm just planning another My Dog, My Teacher event. I'm starting to have little workshops at my house, and I do one-on-one coaching.
And you work online too, don't you? So they don't have to be
in Sydney. Most of my clients in America and Canada at the moment. So,
right.
So yeah, no, what I would do, like today is a really cool coaching day. Today we are looking for finding the value part in a dog relationship and how they can honor it. Like they really want to find joy in their relationship with their dog again. So we do that. And then we have a dog that's assisting someone with depression. So, yeah, no, I do also, I love working with dogs. But please don't come to me if you go like, my dog has separation anxiety. I'm like, no, you need to listen to these amazing ladies. I'm just here to help you through the process. But if your dog needs someone else.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been amazing.
I had such a good time. Thank you for giving me one of the best 5:30 a.m. starts ever. Thank you.
Oh, it's been wonderful listening to you. Thank you very much, Birdie. You've been an absolute star.
I'd love to hear more from you. Like, I really do, because I think that's a new topic. And dogs are becoming so important in people's lives. So I think you're just on the, you know, you're just dipping into a new era. Like, I think you're the forefront runners of quite something important. So all the best to you all. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining us this week with our extra special guest, Bertie. This is Stacy from Focused Fun in the US. And closing out with me is...
Hi, this is Sarah McLaren from the UK at Separation Anxiety Solutions, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram or on my website at www.separationanxietysolutions.com. I would also like to say thank you so much to Birdie. Oh gosh.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
And I'm Ness Jones. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoders, and I'm in Australia. You have been listening to Tales from the Doghouse Separation Anxiety Explained. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google, and Stitcher, and other listening apps. Once again, thank you so much, Bertie. It's been amazing. I shall put all your details in the show notes if anybody wants to contact Bertie and work with her one-on-one or enjoy one of her workshops. So we shall be back next week with another great episode. Bye.
Bye. Bye.